Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends. Broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working?
I sure can.
Can you feel it?
Yeah.
How's it going?
I can feel it. I'm powerless over nouns. How about you guys?
Well, here's one.
I don't know.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah. Thank you, Diana Davison. Yep.
I've never really contemplated my power over nouns.
I'm barely... Well, in Narcotics Anonymous, and I am an ex-member who's still sober, so I'm not breaking my anonymity saying that I used to go. They say that we're powerless... In their literature, they say, we are powerless over people, places, and things, which makes sense. Like, drug addicts always try to change their surroundings without changing themselves. Like, you know, like, oh, if I don't hang out with her, I'll be okay. Or if I don't go to that job, I'll be okay. I don't go to that place. Or, you know, I don't hang out with him, I'll be okay. And like, no matter what, you end up using. So they say they're powerless over people, places, and things. And I remember from Schoolhouse Rock that is nouns. So I'm powerless over nouns, Dobby and Diana. Are you?
That was such a great show, Schoolhouse Rock.
I don't know. I think verbs give me some power over nouns because I'm drinking coffee and
action.
That's a verb.
Hey, I'm drinking
me
coffee
to
again
take
too.
In
you know,
a noun.
I'm not nearly as sick as I was. Like, I'm not coughing nonstop. It's the bizarrest thing. It's like I just basically started taking like Tums and Prilosec, and it almost cured my asthma. Like, that's what it was I was getting acid reflux, didn't notice it. Tiny bits of acid from my stomach were going into my lungs. That's what was causing all this. I mean, there's still other issues to deal with, and they're still going to put me on some other things to take me off some other things, but I'm a lot better than I was, man. And
see, you took a bunch of nouns?
I took a bunch of nouns.
Things that were nouns.
Well, it depends what nouns you take. Some nouns can kill you, and other nouns can save you, and other nouns are just fun and fattening.
There's a little lesson in grammar from Michael Dean.
Where would we be without nouns?
Speak up, Dobby Barker, like you're on radio. So
I said, where would we be without nouns?
I heard you. I'm just saying, just giving you some notes here. So we have a birth announcement. Founding fiend, Nima Vedati, who founded the Freedom Fiends with me in 2011, and then went off to make babies, and I had to replace him with 20 people, because it takes a village to replace Nima Vedati. So he went out and he and his wife had a little blob of protoplasm, and it's real cute, and now it can talk. This is like a year or two later. But they just had another one today, and we want to celebrate that fact. They had a little boy this time. His name, he has the coolest name in the world. Dobby has comments about the name. We would like to welcome to the earth today Archer Azad Vedati. Now, what did you say about that name?
I said he sounds like a modern H.P. Lovecraft character. I love the combination of Archer and Azad. I just think that's so cool.
Yeah. Well,
definitely a famous name.
Nina and his brother have mixed names like that. Their dad is from Iran. He came here right before the revolution in the 70s when things were falling apart. And Nima's first name is Nima, and his middle name, I forget what it is, but it's like Paul. It's like a, you know, Western name. And his brother's the other way around.
Right.
His brother's name is Frank, and then his middle name is Persian. So it's a mixed name. But I like Archer because the cartoon character.
Yeah.
Well, that was what I was thinking of. Yeah, Archer.
Yeah. Yep. And his nickname is Archibald. That's weird. The nickname's longer than the name. It's kind of cool.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Unusual. Well, I guess we'll be able to count on him to say really blunt and aggressive things. Isn't that Archer, pretty much?
Yes.
I've never seen this cartoon. Like,
really?
Yeah.
I think you should watch some during the
memes
break.
Of this cartoon.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, it's better than Death Clock.
What?
It's true.
I'm intrigued now because I didn't have a sense of Death Clock until you turned me on to Death Clock. Speaking of which, do you watch Rick and Morty?
No, what's that?
It's so it's a grandpa who he recruits his grandson to go out on crazy adventures using a portal gun that takes them into alternate versions of their own reality. And it's very high concept sci-fi done in a bizarre kind of crazy like Metalocalypse style animation.
Well, the funny thing about the concept high concept is it means the opposite of what it sounds like. Like high concept sounds like it means complicated and lofty and beautiful and deep, but high concept actually means the only thing is the concept. Like the movie Jaws is high concept. You know, basically, if you can explain the concept in about 5 words, it's high concept.
I can do it in 2. My favorite episode is called Anatomy Park. It's a theme park inside somebody's abdomen, and you can shrink to the size of like an amoeba and go into a Jurassic Park style tour of their internal organs. And they fight like the Ebola virus and like whatever.
That was like an episode of Futurama, wasn't it?
I don't know. This was Rick and Morty. An episode of
Futurama where there was a theme park in some mostly dead guy's stomach.
Mostly.
Yeah, he was like a bum that was about to die, and then they had to figure out how to get everyone out of the theme park before he died.
What? They did this on Futurama, too? Because that is exactly the plot of Rick and Morty's episode. He's like the mall Santa, and he like is willing to get a theme park put in him for a couple of dollars.
Maybe I'm getting it wrong. I thought I was watching Futurama, but somebody was showing me the clip, so maybe I was watching the show you're talking about.
The Stephen King movie Cujo was greenlit as high concept on a 3-word pitch, and the pitch was Jaws on pause.
That's cool.
Yep.
And when I hear high concept, I just think of a story that eventually will fall apart because there's too many holes in it. Like you get into these things with alternate realities, or
that's actually low concept.
Oh, going back in their time to change.
Here's
things.
The definition: high concept is a type of artistic work which can be easily pitched with a succinctly stated premise. It is contrasted with low concept, which is more concerned with character development and other subtleties that aren't as easily summarized.
So I'm going to stick with it. It's low concept.
Every stuff in my stuff is low concept because, like everything I've done, if someone else did it, it wouldn't be the same. You know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's you got to make yourself an integral part of it.
I'm going to stick with high concept for Rick and Morty, and it's basically this: you take any two high concept sci-fi concepts, and you cram them together. And then you let like a comedian write the script.
Not even in a blender, in a vice.
Yeah.
So if I had to come up with something off the top of my head when I heard the term high concept, I'd think of Inception, right?
What's that?
Inception's sort of high concept. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, maybe Inception. But it was actually played out really well in terms of character development, too. And low concept would be something like The Walking Dead.
What?
No.
Well, I would think of low concept as something like The World According to Garp or these like Woody Allen movies
that are really
they're just entirely about the like minutiae of the characters' lives.
Although I could see Walking Dead too because the high concept description of it wouldn't do it justice. It's like a zombie movie based on a plague released in modern day America. It's really all about the characters.
Yeah. It is all about the characters. That's true.
Well, zombie movies have pretty much been the same since George Romero and, The Night of the Living Dead.
Same since Frankenstein, haven't they?
You guys are so off. Like, there's so much debate about the lines between zombie movies.
Dobby's an expert. We basically, just insulted everything Dobby stands for. We're like,
that's sort of like those zombie movies. What has science really done since Galileo, guys?
I was like, my first zombie movie was Dawn of the Dead. I didn't see Night of the Dead, but Dawn of the Dead, like one of the most memorable moments. Very beginning, they're all trapped in an apartment building, and they kick a door open and blow a zombie's head off. Right?
What's the original one, the Texas one, the black and white? Is it Texas Chainsaw or Night of the Living Dead?
Night of the Living Dead's the original zombie movie.
From the 60s, 70s, right?
I think it's the 60s.
Like Dawn of the Dead, it's fabulous because they go to a mall because they're thinking, how do we find stuff that we need, right? Yeah. And then all the zombies are there and they go,
you go to the Agora.
Because that's what they know. And that moment, it was really stuck with me that, like, you
know, it was like an anti-capitalism thing, wasn't it? An anti-consumerism thing?
Well, that's what, so this is what I love about the zombie thing is Romero invents this monster, which is essentially just sort of stealing the vampires from I Am Legend and sort of dumbing down the concept. But he wants it desperately to be a story about consumerism or a metaphor about consumerism, and it's just really not working. And so he's always, like, Romero movies are always trying to force this point using characters, like putting them in a shopping mall. But, like, other people have taken the zombie concept and used it to express all kinds of things. Like, they make it about racism, they make it about all sorts of prejudices, they make it about power, they make it about whatever, survival.
I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre was the first zombie movie. It's 4 years.
Is that even a zombie movie? Isn't that like a slasher movie?
It's not a zombie movie.
That's got weird.
No, they're just stupid. They're not zombies.
They're just stupid. All
right. Yeah, they're like kind of Deliverance style stupid.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, arguably, like White Zombie or like Revolt of the Zombies, like these old like black and white, some of them are even silent films, like they're zombie movies, but they're not about like the dead rising back from the grave to eat the living. They're about like a voodoo wizard who's got a slave who he's like made into a zombie to do his
will. Lugosi, they're paying him in morphine or something.
Here's an unusual monster.
What about The Serpent and the Rainbow? That was about the actual practice of, like, kind of zombification.
Yeah,
where people would not be quite dead, but they'd come back, they'd be brought back by, like, some sort of, you know, weird medicine or something. This is supposed to be a true story, The Serpent and the Rainbow.
Speaking of crack zombies, though, crack kind of turns people into zombies. There was something awesome on last night's Freedom Fiends. There's this thing that police lovers say of, well, yeah, you criticize cops, but then when you're in trouble, who are you going to call? You're not going to call a crackhead. And the Fiends were like, no, I'd call it crackhead. If you pay him in crack, he'll risk his life more than the cop will. He'll go get your suicidal brother out of the bathroom without shooting him.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Sabi Barker.
What now?
Tell us what's up. Tell us what's up, Sabi Barker.
I'm, you know, just over here cooking up some brains.
Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and he eats the brains of undead children in the Middle East.
It's true.
It's the Freedom Fiends, the show not worth fact-checking.
Well, you know,
don't dare fact-check is more like...
You know, the first rule of living in a zombie horde is to each according to their need and from each according to their means.
Really? Zombies are commies?
That's what I think. Yeah. Because the horde clearly needs your intestines more than you do. Barack Obama is
socialist, but so are all politicians.
And once you're a zombie, you won't need those organs anyway, so you clearly don't need them the way they do. So
there's a big movement, a kind of zombie-like movement in America to make it the law that everyone's an organ donor. Do you know about this? It's kind of zombie-like.
That is very zombie-like.
And one of the guys, one of the heads of it, like driving people of it, was he's probably going to be the next Supreme Court judge. He was appointed by Reagan and his massive powers grew more under Obama. What's the guy's name? He wrote that book, Nudge, about nudging people into compliance.
Oh, somebody was praising that book to me the other day, and I about threw up in my mouth. I can't. Oh.
Well, and he coined the term libertarian paternalism for what he does.
Yeah. Just,
it's poisoning the word libertarian. God, what's that guy's name?
I don't remember.
But, yeah, you know, I'm not an organ donor. Are you guys organ donors?
I haven't filled out the card. Organs are covered by the BIPCOT amendment license.
Yeah, there you go. My problem is, okay, here's the thing. They are really quick to declare you brain dead and take your organs if you're an organ donor. And what they generally like to do is do what's called a live cadaver organ transplant.
Yeah.
So, like, basically, like,
I've seen this in Monty Python's The Meaning of Life.
No, it is. This is real. Like, once you're clinically brain dead, which they often kind of push the boundaries of that too, they put you on anesthetic. And just start cutting, like, you're still breathing. You're still alive. And, you know, they say you can't feel it and you have no consciousness of it, but it can take hours, you know? Like, they'll, or like, 10, 12, 15 hours. Like, they'll, you know, if there's somebody that, like, needs a transplant, you know, they'll get the person to the hospital and keep your body alive to give the best chance of that organ going in. I don't like that. Like, basically, if my head gets chopped off by a crane collapse, take what's left in the body, you know? But I don't want to be on a ventilator while they're cutting me open. It's scary.
Sure.
Zombies.
I mean, I use this argument when people give me the, like, the needs of the many outweigh the rights of the few sort of argument. Is I say, hey, you know what? If you really believe that it's okay to aggress against the individual to save multitudes, then you should go to the hospital and commit suicide, because statistically speaking, your organs could save the lives of 8 people.
I think you should just, when someone says that, you should just punch them, and then when they're on the ground, take their wallet and just throw the money out the window. Cass Sunstein is the guy's name.
All right.
Well, I don't really have, like, any problem with people using my organs if I'm gone and I don't need them anymore, but I don't know, when I think about it, it just reminds me of, like, this friend I had when I was in high school, and he had a t-shirt made up that said, necrophiliacs against cremation, keep our dead intact.
I like it. I used to have a tie-dye shirt that I made and wore to Grateful Dead shows that said, dead girls can't say no.
Ooh, edgy.
Wait a minute, that's an AFI song.
Is it?
I can F the dead and they don't complain.
Well, I want to serve humanity by being kept brain dead and alive as a sex surrogate. People can just climb on.
You know, people always want to donate their bodies to science. I think I'd rather donate mine to art.
Or literature. Yeah, to art. Well, do you know about that there's a controversial traveling art exhibit of, like, articulating cadavers from China, and it's like, you know, it may be like convicted dissidents who were killed to make the art. You know about that?
Mm-mm. Absolutely, yeah. There was a big
hoopla
about it when they came to Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good word, hoopla.
What was the hoopla?
Well, we're supposed to be talking to Granny here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they. I can't remember the name of. There's some religion that's really persecuted in China, so that's the theory about where they got Fulang these bodies from.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, that's the problem people have, is they believe that that's how they acquired the corpses. But there is actually a better example of bodies as art.
It's called Bodies: The Exhibition. If you want to look it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah. But there's a guy who donated his skull to a theater production of Hamlet.
Nice.
That's good art.
It is.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Oh.
headline from India. A guy who wrote an anarchist pamphlet now questions what he wrote.
Oh, you centrally planning anarchy, you Indians. I want to do a shout out to Radio Carabao in beautiful sunny downtown Manila. Is it sunny right now? What time is it in Manila? Do you guys know? We're playing there. We're on the air. Time.
I have no idea.
Time in Manila.
We'll say it's sunny
PM.
Because
it's 1:34 p.m. It's beautiful sunny downtown Manila. All right. So you guys want to talk about some guy that's centrally planning anarchy and like throwing it down the memory hole?
Well, there's this guy in India. His name's Arvind Kejriwal. Okay. I said that perfectly correct. And so he's this guy who he used to be known as spouting off the virtues of anarchy. He's a teacher. And now he wants to shield children in Delhi from entertaining such thoughts. So he actually wants to remove references to anarchy from the history books and any material that's taught in schools.
That's square.
A teacher. The stunning part is that he's a teacher. He's not just some
I'm shocked there's material on anarchists in public schools. What textbooks are these? Like, I didn't hear word one about this when I was in school.
It doesn't say what grade he's teaching in.
Yeah, but, that's true. Do we know, is it a high school or a middle school? Kindergarten students now no longer have books that say A is for anarchy.
Here's the reason given in the article. He says, after reading this lesson, students feel that agitation, anarchy, and going against the government are the only means of securing social justice. This is not true in a democracy, says the circular, which is trying to... Oh, it says class 10. So it's
for tenth some grade, sort of
really great 10th grade, yeah. Yeah,
I'm going to use this picture. I'm looking at this picture from the bodies exhibit. There's a picture of a scientist handing a human femur to this like 6-year-old girl, and she's looking up and smiling, like, "Here, little girl, have a human femur." I'm going to use that for the post. I think I'll send it to you guys. So anyway,
No, but like it goes on to say, therefore, children should be taught to avoid agitations or going against the government. Like, isn't this exactly what freedom of speech is trying to prevent people being disallowed from talking about things and, censorship?
India is really bad about this. India, we did a show about 2 years ago about India's, new rules on free speech. And it was basically, India banned saying anything bad about any politicians in India. And then the politicians were defending this, and they were literally saying, without realizing the irony, stupidity, and just outright comedy in what they were saying. They were saying things like, "We believe in free speech, but this is unacceptable." You know, like that's a contradiction.
I was reading a really great book on freedom of speech, actually written by one of the guys who writes for Spiked Online. And he was talking about the Charlie Hebdo stuff, and everybody's going out saying, "Je suis Charlie, je suis Charlie." And then they were talking about it afterwards, and the same people started going, "Freedom of speech is really important, but..." And they always had a but. So
yeah, they
became called
stuff.
So it was called the Battle of the Buttheads.
There you go.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, there was a big response in Europe to those shootings at the Charlie Hebdo office or event of, we need to censor extremist Muslim speech, but the whole thing, the magazine was celebrating free speech, we're not afraid, we'll print what we want, and people that liked the magazine weren't seeing the irony in that they were calling for, people were calling for limits on speech.
Well, the other weird thing is Charlie Hebdo was not, it's not specifically about offending Muslims, it's equal opportunity offense. Like, there's all kinds of crazy.
That's
sort of
the National
racist,
Lampoon,
nationalists.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's just sort of poking fun at everybody, right? But the weird thing is
that
the same people.
It's
no,
not.
It isn't that funny.
It's French,
but right, it's as dry as their cheese.
that Diana's from the West Coast.
The thing that was strange to me was that the same people saying, "Je suis Charlie," in response to the attack, were the people calling to censor him before the attack.
Yeah.
I know, it was like some opportunity he was offensive to sound to them. Really good, you know? They didn't really mean it, as obvious from the way they acted afterwards. But most people didn't really read this magazine because it wasn't a very well-produced magazine, from what I understand.
Or in English.
But, I know. But they did another set of cartoons. Like, just recently, they did one with the migrant crisis and stuff. They did one where they were making fun of commercialism in their society, and they were kind of making fun of Christians. They said, one says, the proof that Europe is Christian, and they have Jesus walking on water and the kid, this kid drowning, right? And it says, it's tasteless, right?
Well, there was a Muslim kid that drowned trying to get over on a boat, and there were pictures of it.
The Syrian kid who turned out to be a Turkish kid and not related to the refugee crisis at all.
But
the same people who were saying, you know, freedom of speech, now they're going, okay, that crosses the line, right? And they totally actually missed what the cartoon was saying.
Yeah.
Completely. And now everybody wants to shut down Charlie. They're not Charlie anymore.
My cat was named Charlie, and I just, around that time, just posted pictures of my cat that said, "Je suis Charlie." People that liked my cat. My cat had a fan club. People got it.
Yeah.
People don't get satire, is the problem. I wrote an article once that was not only satire, the person I was making fun of, saying, calling them a traitor, actually is the one who got me to write the article because he thought something was really funny. He's like, but I can't write it myself. So I actually wrote the article for him. And then I got accused of being some sort of disturber. He was trying to turn everybody against this guy because they didn't understand the satire. Like, I had stuff in there saying I was crying into my ramen bowl until the tears turned into a scrying glass, and then all of a sudden the truth was clear, right? And they didn't get it with satire.
Somebody almost got fired criticizing my satire one time. When I was 18 in college, I used to did an unpaid weekly column. It was the first writing gig I had. Actually, it was a gig because he used to buy me beer, so I was paid. And I wrote this article for this like really crappy, like printed on newsprint, like entertainment. It was like whatever cover bands were playing in town were in the magazine kind of thing, like entertainment in upstate New York in this crappy little town. And one week I, you know, was busy and just forgot to write a column. And it was like 5 minutes before the deadline. So I called the guy up and I said, and this is when Reagan was president. And I said, okay, just print 4 column inches of blank space and put my masthead for the column at the top of it and my name and say, "What I Like About Ronald Reagan" by Michael Dean. And he just printed 4 inches of blank space. And
that is hilarious.
And it's pretty clever for, you know, 18 for me back then, for square me. And so this guy that was a DJ at a local, like a music DJ who also did a lot of chatter and chat and talking on some local rock station, got really offended about it and wrote a letter to the editor next week that said that you had to he said, "I don't always agree with Mr. Reagan, but you have to respect the office of the president. And this drugged out little space cadet, Michael Dean, blah, 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 blah." And I told my dad about it. And my dad got his lawyer to write the guy made the mistake of like signing not just his name, but like his call letters of his station. So my dad's lawyer called up the station and threatened to sue the station and the guy if he didn't print a respectful retraction. So the next week, they printed a letter that had him say, "I'd like to make a quote unquote respectable retraction to Mr. Dean." And that was it. It was hilarious. But that guy,
respectable retraction.
Yeah, but that guy is now like on one crappy little station in Florida, and we're on 32 stations, so we win, man.
I actually had somebody in the film industry tell me word for word, "You'll never work in this town again."
Nice.
I actually had them say that, and then right afterwards, I never saw him work on another film. He ended up having to teach.
Nice. When I was in LA doing indie stuff, I used to get interns off Craigslist, and a couple times they really peed me off. And I told them, "You'll never work for free in this town again."
Burn.
Worms. Oh. Yep.
Anarchy in India.
People are so in each other's business.
I don't get why this story is news. Who cares that some guy that wrote an anarchist pamphlet now wants to censor books? I'm sure there's lots of examples of people who wrote pamphlets and then changed their mind later. Especially if he's a teacher. That means that he's being paid by the government he's claiming to despise. So,
well, this is a magazine in India, too. So it's news in India.
So is this like a name people recognize? Is this like...
Maybe.
Like... Kanye West, no longer an anarchist. what is this?
No, I don't know. His last name's Roy. Roy is like Smith in India.
Well, I think that they're actually supporting his opinion in this article. And I've noticed that a lot in the news, actually.
There's actually a bunch about... He's on a few articles in Wikipedia. He's an author.
Okay. All right. Well, I have noticed a lot in the news lately, which is actually a good sign. That if they start really making a point to tell people how bad anarchy is, they must be afraid of it for some reason. You know, I think it's all the zombie walks going on. They know that people are sensing something's breaking down.
We know.
Davi, I don't hear you clicking. I think we need to think of what you're going to, if you're going to make a zombie image for tonight's show.
Sure. What do you have in mind?
I think it should be Cass Sunstein. He's the guy that wants libertarian paternalism.
Okay.
I think it should be him in the bodies exhibit as a zombie.
How looking for things to Cass? Eat.
Cass.
All right.
And it should have the word brains in there somewhere.
Cass. It's got ass right there in it. Cass. Yep. And he is a horse's patootie.
I've been my recent drawings of zombies have featured them saying the word clay instead of brains.
Why?
I just think it's funny. Because I'm doing these illustrations that are sort of more of a, like, Evil Dead sort of demonic zombie. And the idea is that they're, like, some sort of ancient race of infectious bacteria or something. And I like lookness of clay in the sense that, like, Adam and Eve are made from clay.
Yeah. Okay,
so
I get it.
So it's sort of like saying, that is but weird. It's clay.
I always thought that was weird in Sunday
like
school.
How weird it is.
Clay.
I actually like zombie type characters that move really fast instead of like that sort of sleepwalking.
Oh, don't get Davi started.
I accept the running zombies.
They're
it's okay.
Way freakier.
Yeah, which is also the only way to justify a complete collapse of society. I don't buy that.
I know.
Could not hold off a bunch of slow shambling.
If you could outwalk them. Yeah, it's true, man.
They've only got one hit point.
Walking Dead, are they always slow, or do they ever run?
They ran in the first season. We're out. We're out, yeah.
With Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
I really dig the music on this show.
Cool, I made it. Me and Vidali made it.
We are back with more anarchy in the news. So here's one that's a little closer
brains.
To home.
Brains.
Brains. This one's a little closer to
home. My wife calls me Daddy Zombie sometimes because when I'm being pleasured, like, you know, things you can't say on radio or a back rub or something or eating a good meal, I make noises like...
Nice.
Okay, go on. Sorry. Too much
anarchy in the news. Yeah, more of it, a little closer to home this time. There's this article called Anarchy is the First Stage of a War on Democracy.
I'm scared.
So
protect me.
I know, right?
Government.
to strike Cops. Fear into the hearts of everyone. So
I would
this
have thought
is,
by now anarchists had learned that you can't wage war on ideas because they never end. It's like the war on drugs and the war on terror. I mean, you can't wage war on democracy.
This is coming from Washington, D.C., and they're talking about police being targeted and shot at more often as of late, presumably since Ferguson. And they've had anonymous phone calls. One of them gets quoted a lot. as threatening the police, saying, we are about to start striking fear, shooting down all cops that we see by themselves. And this person phoned in with a voice masking software of some
sort.
Wait,
I thought anonymous phone call was like cop speak for off-duty officer. Isn't that what that means? Yeah.
He call him. Did the voice synthesizer just sound like Bane? I can't do it. Jim Jesus does it. You just have to talk into a coffee cup and try to sound like the first James Bond, I think.
All right. So they got that. But now, so this is basically describing so-called vigilante groups. Potentially they are out there. There have been some threats found to police stations. And it's being kind of linked to Black Lives Matter. And them taking the law into their own hands.
Black rifles matter.
Yeah. And then there's this response in this article, this Association of Mature American Citizens.
Are they plump and mature?
AMAC.
Does that mean old?
Yeah, it does. It says the Association of Mature American Citizens is a vibrant, vital senior advocacy organization.
I'm part of the Royal Order of Immature Americans.
Yeah, we act and speak on their behalf, protecting their interests and offering a practical insight on how to best solve the problems they face today.
Wait, these are people who speak on behalf of senior citizens?
Yeah, they're an association to represent them. And they're calling for volunteers of self-elected representatives to come out and try to battle off the vigilantes. Vigilantes fighting vigilantes.
Well, you know,
and this
snipers
is
counter-sniper. Sniper counters by freedom fighter, terrorist. Depends which side you're on.
But they're presenting this as if this is anarchy, but really this situation is going on because you have a government in place that is supposed to be doing a job and they aren't doing it.
I was watching this documentary today on the civil rights movement and the fact that the FBI could not stop the KKK in the South. So basically what they did was they hired the mafia to go down there and torture information out of people. Like, think about that. Like,
whoa.
Think about what that says about government accountable created police organizations when, you know, supposedly the biggest, most bad butt one in America, the FBI,
so,
you know, has to hire the mafia.
They're dependent on the people that they're put in place to combat to do their job.
Yes.
So here we are, where our big job is to organize crime that's too big for your local police department, and we have to rely on them to do our job.
Yeah, well, the reason they did that was because they couldn't crack what was going on down south and get, like, the, you know, because the police were in the Klan, like, you know, those three students that were murdered, that was real famous, that kind of was like the tipping point. There were three cars that went out there and murdered those kids in the swamp, and one of them was a police car full of police, you know.
This is government. I actually read in a bunch of minutes from the Senate. And loss of faith, like, no, I know I'm a geek, but loss of faith in the criminal system and the justice system is really important to a government. That's what we see now.
We'll come back.
Worms.
Talk about it. Yeah. You'll come back.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, "You didn't build that"? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Trigger warning. This is
CIA's orbital mind control laser to beam the pirate signal of protest directly into your frontal cortex and tell you that you are in fact free.
But are they back? Are they really?
Freedom's all in the mind. You got to free your mind first and the rest will follow. It sounds like a terrible platitude, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially since, like, the mind is much less useful when you take it out of the cage that it was born in.
Yeah. It's like
meaning the skull.
The first step to healing is to realize that something's wrong. It's like, you know, that's the biggest step. It's not really, actually. I think when you realize that you have a problem, that's just the beginning of the trouble. There's so much work to really set yourself free or to heal yourself or to do any of these things. They're just trying to pump you up.
Well, you know, they say the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, but the other thing is so does the journey that you kind of give up in the middle. So does the like journey where like you get up all full of ambition and then you end up at the bar. All those journeys start with one step too. So
no, and you're like your second step, you kind of like your shoe doesn't quite move right and you trip and you look stupid and
every broken ankle begins with a one step.
Then you're looking around to see if anybody noticed because you kind of look silly tripping on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
What other people think of us is actually fairly important. That's one of our problems I think we face. That's actually like in a lot of freedom of speech debates going on. It's been brought up, and I actually think this is really important, that one of the things that silences people the most is the fear of what other people will say about you. So you may have an opinion that's unpopular, and nobody's telling you can't say it, but people will end up not saying things because they're afraid of ridicule, they're afraid of being made fun of. I mean, look what anarchists go through. People laugh at us all the time.
That seems like a perfectly valid market function in speech to me. Like if you don't like have the gumption to just say what you believe because you think people are going to scoff, like maybe you shouldn't be a public speaker. But on top of that, like, that is the way to police offensive speech, is by, you know, speaking about it. So,
but then the thought doesn't go away. It's still sort of sitting there and they're just, you know, keeping it to themselves or whispering about it in the back circuit. I think it's way better, you know, even particularly with offensive speech, that people feel like they can voice it. They'll always find other people who agree with them somewhere, right?
Well, maybe it just needs to marinate for a little while. And then it'll come out exceptionally offensive.
Yeah, but it gets that stuff out in public for discussion, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, what you said is pretty valid, too, that, you know, if you're afraid to be mocked, you shouldn't be getting up on a platform to speak. That's, you know, extremely important.
You have other things to work on.
I know. Well, and this is one of the things that's being said a lot by social justice warriors, too, is when you say things that can be deemed hateful or offensive to somebody, then you're silencing them because they feel marginalized, right? This is one of their big words, marginalized, so they can't get up. And you're monopolizing the platform. And when you get up on a platform, I have a YouTube channel. Let me tell you, when you get up on a platform, be ready for people to try and cut your head off. That's what we do to public figures, is we try to knock them off their platform. So you kind of have to have that inner strength, too. And if you're not quite there, then don't do it, because you will be crying in your pillow at night. Lots of tears shed by people who, you know, just weren't ready for that platform. But what were we talking about before we went on the last break there?
I don't know, zombies or politicians or anarchists or something.
It was about vigilante groups trying to replace the police.
To protect the police. The police need protection from civilians by civilians so that they can do their job of protecting civilians.
Well, I got a cute little story for you, another one from the news that kind of ties into that. There was this story from Brooklyn, brooklyndaily.com, about bicycle anarchy in Marine Park, right? And just bear with me through this scenario, because it's kind of the same thing going on here. You've got residents in this park who used to happily enjoy this quiet little peaceful park, and now there's a ton of traffic going through there, and they're complaining because the traffic is chaotic. There's like people whipping through there on bikes. They don't know which side they're supposed to be riding on for each direction. And the pathways aren't marked. So they've gone to the government, the city, and said, can you please paint these some markings to keep, you know, some order to the pathways? And they said, well, okay, we'll do that. And then they didn't. And it turns out they didn't have a budget for paint, right? And they're like, well, how much can paint cost? I'll go buy some for you. And they're like, no, we want a special kind of glow-in-the-dark paint or whatever, right? It's more expensive. And so then they finally they decided to use this yellow street paint for the normal streets. And so then the citizens are saying, well, they think that this bicycle rental place should pay for the paint because they set up this bike place and now that's increased all the traffic. And so they're making thousands of dollars through their bike rentals and they should be the ones to pay for the paint, right? And it's this, they're calling it anarchy in the park. But their actual problem is that the government won't let the citizens just go out and paint what they want on their laneways.
Yeah.
And so...
And who owns the park? Is it a public park? Is that the problem?
Yeah, it's a city park.
Okay.
And just like, you know, there was, I guess about 3 weeks ago, we were talking about people that wanted to fix potholes in their streets, and the government said, do not go out and fix your own potholes.
Pothole anarchy.
Yeah, it'll make more trouble for us. And I guess it's the same thing with painting. Like, they don't want just any paint there that's graffiti, right? So the citizens can't go out and paint their own pathways because otherwise they're putting graffiti on public
property.
It'll be
paint anarchy.
I know. So their problem isn't anarchy of the cyclists, which is what they're trying to say. Their problem is that they don't have anarchy and they're stuck trying to get the city to do a very, very simple task. And nothing gets done, right? But I was really annoyed at the end where they started saying how, you know, this bicycle rental place should pay for it because you've got places that rent cars, right? But they're not responsible for, you know, painting the lines on the streets.
Sure.
Or fixing potholes or maintaining traffic lights, right? But they sure make money off of the roadways renting cars.
They built a business on the premise that the government was going to provide something for free, namely this park, right? Like, and they saw an opportunity in that. I suppose if there were no parks, maybe you would have like bicycle theme parks or something. But like cities build parks. I don't see why they should have any more responsibility than the average person using it.
Yeah, well...
Like, imagine if I rented skateboards. Would I be in charge of making sure my skateboarders didn't go in the park without paying a fee? Or, like, what if I mean, you could say that about anything. What if I delivered pizza? Am I, like, more responsible to pay for the park if I deliver to somebody in the park?
What if you make kites? Are you responsible for maintaining the wind?
Oh, yeah. Outdoor clothing, running shoes, picnic baskets... All free riders on the park system.
Don't get me going about picnics. I have this thing about picnics. I hate picnics. Okay. It makes me really angry, in fact.
Angry?
Yeah, picnics. Why? Just like, they're so fake. Like, just nothing about a picnic strikes me as being real. But yeah. It's just some sort of weird romantic play that's done in order to, you know, fool themselves into some toxic fantasy. Anyways,
well, like I said, don't get me going on about picnics. Maybe if, like, you're going out of your way to get, like, a wicker basket and a red and white checkerboard picnic blanket and whatever, but, like, if you're going hiking for the day, it might make sense to bring a picnic.
Well, that's just called bringing a snack. You bring, like, trail mix and stuff like that. That's
well,
not
it's
a
not a barbecue. Like, it's, whatever, okay.
All right, so, yeah, we got, like, bicycle anarchy in the park. We've got, like, vigilante groups against vigilante groups. But this word anarchy gets thrown around as if that describes these scenarios. It's so infuriating because it's not anarchy. It's frustration under a government system. That's
yeah,
all they
describe. Yeah, they just mean, like, people acting out of protocol. That's what they mean.
Yeah.
Like, you guys, we built a very clear pathway for you in your life. You're going to go to school, then you're going to get a degree, and then you're going to go and sit in an office cubicle until your, you know, back hurts, and then you're going to, you know, sign up for insurance, and you're going to pay your taxes, and you're going to get your mortgage, and if you deviate from this protocol, it'll be anarchy.
Right. Yeah, they're just describing a set system that's breaking down. So, like, to talk about anarchy, it is a replacement system, not the chaos that takes place when the old system is breaking down.
Sure.
And it just seems stuck in that level of thought in society. People can't see anarchy as an end goal because it's got this flavor of chaos to it. So when they think about it, what they're really thinking about is, like, societies, they always, like, improve, and everybody thinks this is the best time in the entire world. Like, you know, our society is the top, and then it gets decadent, and then it decays, and then something else replaces it. Usually just another version of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's that moment where it gets decadent, and it starts to decay, and people sense that their stability is shaking up. That's what they call anarchy. And I have no idea how to break through that illusion. In conversation, it just seems like it's almost like a word that's been tainted for history.
Well, I always kind of like the argument that anarchy is all that there is. Like, even if you build governments, say, right, and you have these sort of very powerful centralized hierarchies that rule their tax cattle, and so there's obviously no anarchy in that country because there's a government there. But those countries operate in a state of sort of like national anarchy, right? Like there's no ruling class for tyrants. They are sort of obligated to deal with each other practically as equals. And then even if you create a sort of conglomerate like a UN or something like that, the UN exists, if it is the highest law in the land, it exists in a state of anarchy, right? Like, so it's sort of like no matter how tall you build the tower, you're still not at the top. Like, you're still in reality with the rest of us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But
so the question isn't anarchy or order. The question is anarchy for who, right? So you get to either choose, like, anarchy for everybody or only anarchy for the ruling class.
That's a really clever way of looking at it because, I mean, you can pretty much do whatever you want. It's just an issue of consequences. And those consequences are determined by groups that are stronger than you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we call that the government.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, there's some Squisscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the road to freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch. Now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Building the new world in the corpse of the old.
There's nothing decaying like the zombies at a zombie walk. Have you ever seen one of these things?
Yeah, I've been to a zombie walk. I go to zombie conventions.
It's a growing phenomenon. Yeah. It's really great. But a friend of mine that I went to high school with, he actually wrote his doctoral thesis on zombie culture And I guess it was for sociology or something. But he was talking about what that kind of said in terms of people's relationship to the culture around them and stuff. And it's a really neat opportunity to go out and disrupt the community in a really non-aggressive way that's just fun. Like, nobody gets hurt.
Oh, for sure.
They slow down traffic and, you know,
the first the first zombie walk I ever saw was, it must have been in like 2005 or something like that. And so in San Francisco, there's another event called SantaCon, and this usually happens in June. It has nothing to do with Christmas, but it's people sort of go out, everyone dressed as Santa. And the zombie walk in San Francisco, people are instructed to bring a backpack of tattered clothes and makeup so you can recruit people into the herd. And so zombie walk collided with SantaCon, and then you had zombie Santa Clauses wandering around San Francisco.
That is so great. Well, you know, there was one morning I was going to the grocery store, and it was right, like, I was, as soon as it was getting ready to open, I headed down there. And it was, I'm not very good in the morning, so I was kind of doing a zombie walk on the way down. And as I walked down the street, every intersection or street that met up with the one I was on, somebody else would turn the corner and start walking. And they were all walking like zombies, too. And I actually felt like I was in, like, Dawn of the Dead or something like that. We were all going to the mall. Funny. I think zombie walks are actually pretty good representation of the lives that most people live. But it's, you know, done in a fun way. But, you know, 9 to 5, you're just pretty much whatever your weekend is, and a lot of people don't have Saturday, Sunday weekends. You're pretty much
people on autopilot, is that what
working to get there, right? You're just a zombie wandering. I look like a zombie. I'm surprised nobody hit me with a shovel, actually, because I look like a zombie pretty much most of the week this week. But
so I've written a lot on this topic, and my theory is that, like, every monster is sort of a metaphor for something human, right? So, like, werewolf stories are really about dealing with uncontrolled rage, and vampire stories are sort of about unrequited love at this point. I think zombies are a latent fear that people have that democracy doesn't work. I think what makes zombies unique among monsters is that they're the majority, and so the apocalypse is the will of the majority.
Absolutely. That's, you know, a lot of the stuff that I was seeing in the articles I was reading about these zombie walks, and in my friend's thesis as well, that it's a sense that culture is somehow missing something. You're just, like, walking around in is it like a zombie in it? Vampires, I don't know, I think there's, in terms of vampires, is more than, there's a lot of romance that happens, but I think that's dealing with, like, death anxiety and stuff too, the immortality.
Yeah, vampires used to also be the sort of go-to monster for plague, and now zombies are definitely the go-to monster for plague. And part of that transition is man-made virus versus Black Death, right? So vampires were, like, Nosferatu was a story about Black Death being spread by rats. Zombie stories are the story of, like, a government that releases a pathogen by mistake that infects the whole world, right?
Yeah. There's some really great, like, sort of, I guess, meme pictures of political zombies, too. So they've got ones for, like, Obama and Romney from the last elections. I'm looking at one right now. It's really funny. They've got this crowd that actually look like zombies in front of an Obama banner thing. And they've got them all chanting, Obama, Obama.
Yeah. Yeah,
man,
it's the dumb masses. That's what democracy is.
I don't understand chants, actually, when people get together and chant something. There's, like, a weird mentality that takes over you if you ever try doing it. Like, I guess I've been a part of a group that tried chanting stuff for various reasons, and I just couldn't keep doing it because I felt
I couldn't either.
Zoning out.
Yeah. It's the same as, like, cheering at concerts. I've never been one to cheer at concerts. Like, I just want to sit and listen. I'll, like, move around if I feel like dancing or something, but screaming at the top of my lungs as if that makes a difference, I just don't get it.
Yeah, you just hurt your throat at the end of the day. That's all that happens.
But also, like, the idea, I think that the idea is if everybody's saying the same thing all at the same time, then it's louder and clearer. And maybe we'll, like, send the message home, like, what do we want? Time travel. When do we want it? It doesn't matter.
That was one of the things with the, what do we want? Brains. When do we want it? Brains.
Brains. That's what they- yeah. But the thing is, it makes it more unintelligible to say it that way. Like, you would affect more people if you split up and just talked to people in coffee shops than if you crowded together and chanted.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, the worst form of entertainment ever, except for all the others.
Yeah, I'm gonna carry something from the internet, the online discussions, over into the radio here. Godwin's Law. As an online discussion grows longer, the probability of a comparison involving Nazis or Hitler approaches one. Now, I mention this for a reason. Well, I was looking at
that
anarchy.
That sounds fascist.
I know. It's all
I read
fascist.
An article about how Godwin's Law is fascist because it discourages people from talking about fascism and therefore paves the way for fascism to occur unopposed.
You can make an argument for anything.
That should be a rule for the internet.
Mm-hmm. Defend the indefensible. Actually, I think there's a book called that. I'd,
Fight so, bad laws with more laws.
Yeah. Well, so I'm looking at anarchy in the news this week, and this one comes up. I can't see when it was published. On the 12th of September, how anarchy was responsible for Auschwitz. Like, I kid you not. I couldn't believe it.
They know that Auschwitz was done, like, there was a government there, right? Like, it wasn't,
There were a few involved. I know. It's crazy. But this is a book called Black Earth by a guy named Timothy Snyder. And he's some sort of historian, and he's gone through all this stuff, and he's making a claim that it wasn't the governments that caused the Holocaust and acts of atrocious human behavior. It was that various governments were in states of chaos while they were being invaded. And so it was that chaos that caused them to do these crazy things. So anarchy was responsible for, you know, Auschwitz and the Holocaust and all of the crimes normally blamed on Hitler.
So Hitler and the Nazis invade a territory which is undergoing a political upheaval and slaughters them. Therefore, political upheaval is to blame. Yeah, that's definitely a clear philosophical argument against anarchy. Like, what? Like, that, it's still the fascists doing the killing. I don't know if you know this. Like, that would sort of be like saying, yeah, so it turns out that the United States puts a lot of people to death for various crimes that they probably didn't commit. And the cause of that, the culprit, the person responsible, is the lack of competent defense attorneys. Like, it has nothing to do with the guy pulling the switch, or the judge that overlooked evidence, or the jury that convicted, like, that didn't engage in jury nullification. Like, no, that's, none of that is involved. It's because,
yeah, it's not the government's changing the, you know, requirements for burdens of proof or anything like that. It's, you know, the chaos people felt in the meantime.
Right.
But that's like, okay, so we've got this guy writing a book and somebody going, okay, well, they actually said that historians of both the left and right would disagree with what this guy is saying, but the book seems entirely convincing. And,
well, I don't have a problem with the history. I have a problem with the chain of reasoning. It sounds like,
yeah,
maybe his history is correct. Like, so what? Like,
and to be fair, like, you'd kind of have to read the book to know what his complete argument was for this case in order to rebut him, I suppose. But he was saying things like in Poland, there were a bunch of, you know, anti-Semitics he wanted to get all of the Jewish people out of Poland. And so they organized a mass exodus to Palestine, but the British people wouldn't let the Jewish people immigrate on such a high level. And so they organized this non-government group organized a bunch of attacks on the British in order to sneak the Jewish people into Palestine. But so I don't know the details of all of these events, but that's the type of thing that he's looking into and then claiming it was this non-governmental chaos, this anarchy. Well,
so first off, he's talking about Irgun, which is this sort of Zionist terrorist organization. Before Israel existed as a nation state per se, there was this sort of terrorist organization that was sort of affecting to try to establish it, and then it was sort of absorbed by the IDF at some point. So, terrorism is not anarchy. Like, most terrorist organizations are like this, attempting to establish a government. Like, that's what that group was up to. That's what Irgun was. It was a Zionist, meaning a statist, ideology, attempting to establish a state where there currently wasn't one.
Which or at is least why where the it British was a protectorate were blocking or whatever. Them from coming in.
Right, but those are not anarchists. But those are just the other statists, right? Like,
I know, but that's what I was talking about, is like the way anarchy is represented. But people are buying this. They believe that's anarchy. They can't tell the difference.
This wave of disorder that wafts over the land. Like, that's what anarchy is. Like, it's a cold front.
But like you were saying, it's really just a battle between various governments, some of them official and some of them not, but trying to become so.
Yeah.
And that's described as anarchy, and it's the opposite almost.
That would sort of be like describing a religious war as atheism, wouldn't it? Like to call the Crusades an atheist endeavor because there's two religions involved.
Exactly. But I don't know. I can't decide with things like this. Do I want to get the book and read it just so I can, you know, do a proper rebuttal? Or is it just a waste of time? You know, but if this is seriously a book saying that anarchy was responsible for Auschwitz, I think it's important to read.
Maybe we can help these poor saps. Maybe there's another word other than anarchy that describes what it is they're talking about, right? Because they are talking about chaos. They're talking about it's almost like blowback of statism, right? Like, they're talking about political turmoil, maybe, or they're talking about regime uncertainty, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, regime uncertainty. That's perfect. That's exactly what it is. Because, well, I do think that as it is right now, most people believe they need some sort of regime. They need some sort of organizing force to tell them what to do. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I was listening to, I don't even remember his name, some right-wing AM guy. This is the only reason I know a debate took place today. I just don't follow it close enough. And he was praising Reagan for some reason and playing like old, like Jimmy Carter political campaign commercials that were attacking Reagan. Whatever, this guy's stuck in that period. But he was saying that the conservative movement or whatever in that day believed in something called regime maintenance. And this was about like making sure that your party or your political movement like understood what America was all about, and they called that regime maintenance. And that identity politics and anything communist and anything counter to whatever they consider conservative America to be was like disruptive to the regime. And it's like they just called it that. They just used the word regime unabashedly. It's only like recently that they try to sort of waffle around what it is that they say they believe.
Well, this sounds like propaganda, right? Study the party line. Understand, you know, the illusion that the people want to be sold so that you can keep them focused on that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I really do think that, like, in terms of supporting anarchist ideas, I don't really feel like I'm fighting the government. I feel like I'm fighting against that sheeple kind of attitude where people are afraid to be in control of their own lives. They're afraid to not have some sort of a structure that says you must be this high to go on the ride, you know?
Yeah.
That if somebody's not there putting up those signs for them, they're going to somehow fall off a roller coaster they happen to find themselves on.
Hey, look at this. Regime uncertainty is already a thing. This is developed by an economist named Robert Higgs describing the Great Depression. Regime uncertainty was the reluctance of investors to engage in economic activity because it was unclear what the regulatory environment was going to be in the face of the New Deal kind of stuff. So we need to bring it back. This needs to be a broader term. Like, it's because it's bigger than the Great Depression. I mean, it's really all over the world. And it's more than economics, too. It's social, too.
Yeah, well, that really is what most people are describing when they say the word anarchy. They're describing this chaotic uncertainty in terms of trying to pick. But, you know, one of the things that I've noticed with regimes, when a regime changes, is that quite often the new regime will instantly make sure that nobody else can do what they just did.
Oh, yeah. And they'll also instantly do the thing they were just fighting against.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because... Well, also, even in terms of simple changes in existing, parties, there was one group that started up, I think the Reform Party in Canada. They then later on combined with the Conservative Party, which is like the Republicans up here. But the Reform Party, one of their big platforms was that they were going to change the voting system to proportional representation. So your votes would matter, right? Because a lot of times if you live in an area that's, left-leaning or whatever, if you're, more right and the whole area you live in is predominantly left, then your vote is basically lost because you're outnumbered in your community, right? So anyways, without getting into the details of how that works.
Oh, because it's winner-take-all by district? Is that why that happens?
Exactly.
Okay.
And so one of the things, their main platform was that they were going to change the electoral system, and as soon as they managed to get any power through the existing electoral system, they dropped that as a platform. Actually, I'm saying the Reform Party, but it was the NDP, the New Democrat Party, which is actually the most socialist party in Canada.
Okay.
So they dropped that, and I think the Reform Party was going to cut back wages. They dropped that, right? As soon as they got in to a position to get a wage. But the electoral reform is now the Green Party, and I bet if the Green Party grows, as soon as they start getting more people elected, they've only got one right now. They're going to drop that from their platform as well. And at what point do people wake up and
it's
realize?
Like as soon as you meet the ballot requirement, you're absolutely in favor of strengthening the ballot requirements for another party, right?
Uh huh. Yeah, I know. Like, I'm just waiting for an anarchy party. Actually,
well, we have them quite a bit, although they don't tend to be political parties.
Well, I know
that happened all over the country.
I would seriously not be surprised if there was an anarchy party that ran in the current political system. That would be so funny.
Like that ran as anarchists.
Yeah.
Well, why not? I mean, like, I don't know. Is These Nuts an anarchist? He's definitely.
You know what they should do? Just
he's
to help
definitely
other...
regime uncertainty.
You know what they could do? They could just offer like money to independents, right?
There you go.
You get more power, but you're independent.
You pay people to do something else on voting day.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
And also random zombie sounds.
Brains.
We got zombies, we got Hitler, we got regime uncertainty. Can you imagine a zombie movie set like just after World War II and all of the bodies from Auschwitz and stuff would rise up and take
the
revenge?
Oh, like Holocaust zombies?
That'd be awesome zombie movie.
Like as revenge for, so they go after their murderers essentially?
Yeah. They tilt the scales in the opposite direction, but they'd only have like half a hit point, right? Like,
because they're already sort of malnourished.
Yeah. Well, I guess
there is a sort of is a subgenre of Nazi zombies. That is there are a number of movies where that's been the theme, but I've never seen Jewish zombies. That go after Nazis, like that would be an original mutation.
Well, there you go. I don't have the time to do that movie, but whoever's listening, who might, you know, have it.
This concept is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Just feel free to use
it. Throwing it out there for you.
Yep. Sure.
I have enjoyed a few zombie movies. I had a friend who was really into B movies. So if there was a really good horror film, she didn't like it. She only liked the really bad B movies. Right?
Yeah, I can understand that.
So it kind of affected my enjoyment of horror films for a while, but I did go see Zombieland, which I thought was really fun. Was it Bill Murray was in that playing himself?
Yeah, Bill Murray playing himself, yeah.
Yeah, that was really funny. But what I found when I left that movie, because essentially it was like everyone was zombies around them. Well, Bill Murray you thought he was to start with, but anyways, there were so many zombies in that movie that when I left, it had created this impression that zombies were in the world. Like when I walked out, it was kind of matter of fact, right? Like I expected there to be zombies and I figured I'd just deal with it.
Yeah.
I was protected in the theater.
That's essentially how I wrote Survivor Max. Survivor Max is the first of three books on zombies that I've written. And it's about a boy kind of trapped in his apartment complex, and it's just the map I used is my apartment complex. So I used to just walk around that complex and just pretend that anyone I ran into was a zombie, and in my head like figure like, would I hide over there, what if I ran over there, and would just run the scenario and write the chapter based on it.
I think most people imagine, that's awesome, I think most people imagine, like, if the world was full of zombies, you'd be constantly afraid and on high alert. But I think if you lived in a world where zombies were everywhere, it would just be like, and yeah, it's just life, you know? And you just figure out ways to work around it, just like you do with other problems, right?
You know, we live in a world now where there's police on every street corner, and they're just as dangerous as zombies, so you just get used to it, right? You learn to blend in.
What is it? How many laws we're supposed to break every day? Just in casual living?
All of them.
Normally.
I think you're supposed to break all of them.
Yeah, and no, you just kind of go about your business, you know.
I don't know how you would even estimate. Like, there are more laws on the books than a speed reader could not read all the laws in their entire lifetime. So anybody who gives you the number of laws you break in a day, it's really an estimate.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a movement, actually, to start taking the chopping block to the laws that exist and just slowly start cutting them out, weeding out the ones that aren't really all that relevant. It's like it creates a mentality, I think, when you know, there should only be a few core principles that we all agree upon. And then once you get into this massive, you know, network and spider web of stupid little laws about what you're allowed to wear on Sundays and stuff like that, you just stop caring. Right?
See, I think it's a massive injustice to the illiterate. I think that the laws on the books should be simple enough that they can be memorized by everyone. And I don't think we need to write them down anymore. I think that's unfair. It's a literacy privilege is what it is.
And I say this imagining that, like, in an anarchist society, you would still have generally agreed upon laws. I would hope that you would have some principles in terms of justice, because you're going to have somebody who feels hard done by and they're going to want some sort of revenge or
well, even if you don't, the people around you will, and that will have an effect on mm-hmm. your behavior.
So these things would still apply without the state, right? And that's kind of how I see the need for laws. It's only a few simple ones, and then the rest is common sense, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know,
don't
no
eat
zombies.
Your neighbor. That's, I think, the most important. Yeah. That's the most important one.
Good rule.
Worms.
Thanks for a good night.
Yeah. It's a good show. I always like a conversation about zombies. And, you know.
That's what I'm going to look like tomorrow. You're going to look like a zombie again tomorrow.
Well, you just got to... If you make it intentional, then it's all right. It's the unintentionality that... You know, it takes a lot of effort to look like you're not putting in any effort.
Yeah. Worms.